I think you're just like me, and you went down a rabbit hole like on North Korea, how crazy it was like a few years ago. And then it just seems to be like normal. You know what I mean? Like just the antics of Kim Jong-un over there, or as Bill Burr says, fatty cakes. I love that, by the way. They give fatty cakes over there as missiles. But I never had the perspective from just like one person. It's always kind of been like this generalization. Ah, North Korea sucks. Ah, we're out of food. It's a dictatorship. It's horrible. Everything is government censored. But like this person's account was, I don't know. It was more in depth than I thought it would be. Like what she saw, like growing up in this time of North Korea, and how everything is just kind of like manipulated to make it look like North Korea ain't that bad. It's just a silly, silly place, man.
Well, let me just make just a distinction there. It's multiple people's. It's one author, but it's multiple people's defected. It's multiple stories from multiple defectors.
Yeah, there was Dr. Kim. I don't remember any others, but particularly Dr. Kim was pretty interesting.
Well, I listened to – actually, we can get to Dr. Kim in a minute too. So I saw this one coming up. I had an Audible credit. I said a few weeks ago that I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to this book so I have something to add to the podcast that I know we're eventually going to record. So the most shocking part was towards the end of the book and towards the end of Jocko's book review, which was people drugging and kidnapping kids for food.
As bad as it could be, right?
I mean it's even hard to like listen to, when you get to that part where you know they're so starved. And what about this euphemism that they would use? Like they wouldn't call it a famine, they called it the arduous march.
Yep, it's just a patriotic way of saying we're getting through this, right? Like it's just a state run spin on everything, and. Man, like the stories about having the soup, it was just basically, where's in my notes? It was just like water. Where is it?
Salt, water,
and like turnip leaves. And if they were lucky, they had rice and maybe a little bit of wheat in that shit. But like that's like real famine, man. That's like you're not eating anything. Like turnip leaf. What's a turnip leaf? It's just a leaf, right? Like it has no nutrients. It's not a turnip.
To your point, they ran out of rice at the end. So where they have that true believer, I can't remember her name, but she's like 57 years old by the time she visits her daughter who escaped to China.
Yeah.
And what finally turned her, because they made the point that, listen, from the time they were born, they controlled every single piece of information that a person had. So they completely brainwashed these people, right? Pretty much. What finally turned her was they go to China and they had a rice cooker and a microwave. And she couldn't believe that this machine made a noise, and that meant it was making rice, where they had been several years, I think at that point, several years without any rice, and that just a poor person in China could have a machine that makes rice on command. It just blew her mind.
Yeah, and we definitely don't look at microwaves like that, you know? Like, that exists, that'll be there tomorrow, and I don't know. It's just part of the fabric of our daily lives, man. That's just so crazy to me. Like, it's really hard to put yourself in a place like that. Especially since we understand like kind of like personal freedom, and we have many liberties in this country. I think we take a lot for granted.
There's a couple things that were in the book that weren't in the podcast I want to talk to you about, which just blew my mind. So they talked about what dating was like for young people in North Korea. Usually you'd have like some kind of arranged marriages or so if you found somebody you liked and you wanted to date independently, what they would do is they'd wait till the sun went down at night, and all you could do is walk together in the pitch black because there's a spark, like not many places to have electricity, as you can see with like satellite footage, to this day. And what they consider dating was walking together at night, looking ahead and talking and whispering, because you're not allowed to do this. it would take a few years of dating for you to hold hands, and then a few more to kiss on the cheek.
That'd be the first rule I break, you know.
Well, that's. I also thought about that. I was like, how do they like override people's biology? Because like, I don't. Who knows? I mean. But what was interesting is this the end result is you had teachers in their 20s that were elementary school teachers that didn't know how babies are made.
Wow.
Yeah, that stuck out to me. That's one of the notes I took when I was writing when I was reading the book.
That was in the book. Yeah, I was. They didn't say that in the podcast, but like.
Dude. And this the lady they were talking about, I think her name's like Mayan or Mayan or something like that. Mayan. I don't know her how to pronounce it correctly, but
we love you pronouncing things. So.
Well, you know, you get the point. You gotta keep up. So her husband starves to death, then her son starves to death, and she's wrecked with guilt the rest of her life because she left her son in their, it's not even a house, it's like a shack. To go try to get food, and he died when she was gone. And then she almost dies. She passes out on the street, and she's found by her daughters because the daughter, like the control of the family goes to the husband. So the daughter, if you got married, the daughter would go into the husband's family. And even like the kids were controlled by the husband's family. So let's say you divorce, like they could take the kids and still be raised by the husband's family. So that's something that was also in the book. What else? Something that was in the podcast that I also took note of was there was like a Scientology-esque feel to all this. I don't know if you picked up on that, but did you hear what they called someone that was basically thoroughly brainwashed?
What the North Koreans did?
They would refer to them after they were successfully went through training, an improved human being. that terminology is like, doesn't that remind you of Scientology? It's really, really bizarre, man.
A little bit. It's like an impossible standard. I gotta think you're fully brainwashed if you believe you can get better by knowing this shit like already. But yet again, these people are generations.
What do you deep mean by
into,
that?
They're generation deep into it at least, and they don't know any better. Like they're kind of born into it. So later generations are kind of easier, more susceptible to the mirage or the facade that the country is kind of like made to the
as opposed to the people that were like adults or fully formed people before Kim Song Il took over. That's what I found really hard to deal with is that there's people alive in North Korea that could remember what it was like to have electricity. Now imagine like we went through the people around the turn of the century went through the opposite. They went from not having power to then, you know, basically they didn't think of it as having electricity. They thought of it as having lighting first, right? That was like the killer app to spread electricity. So you go from not having, from doing things by candlelight or in darkness to now you have power and it's amazing. What about going the other direction, having electricity, having air conditioning, and then one day you just don't?
I would ask some questions, man, but you know, obviously that's not going to happen. Like there had to have been like a collective acceptance of the way things were. Like I imagine that they kind of blamed somebody else, like the Japanese or the South Koreans or hell, even the Americans. Like, oh, they just took our energy.
That's most of it was.
Yeah, they took your light. Did they explain that or
they did blame? They blamed basically blame America for everything. Because they still traded with Japan, they traded with China. They, you know, obviously hated South Korea, so that's not. But they thought like South Korea was basically a proxy for American colonialism. But I guess the reason why you couldn't really say anything is because they talked about that one woman's dad had been a POW, and he would refuse to talk about it. And they talked about how you hammered down your own personality. You basically eliminated any shred of individual personality as a survival mechanism. Huh. And so, you know, what are you going to do when the power goes out? You can complain, they'll just kill you. Because if you complain, your neighbors are going to snitch on you. And then that happened where they're, so some people up in the party, I think it's called the Workers' Party, some of them would get TVs, which not every household had TV. So if you were bequeathed a TV, which obviously Jocko talked about how they only had preset channels, you would leave your door open when it was on because people from your neighborhood would just be welcome to come in and watch it with you. And they're watching state-run TV at the time, and they're talking about, like, look how industrious the North Korean people are, and look at all the boots they're producing. And the guy that was up in the party that was given the TV, he's like, basically couldn't control his outburst. And he's like, that's, he's like, what boots? Like, where are they? And he was complaining because he thought the news story was fake. And he gets called in. He's like, no, I was saying, you know, I want the boots. They're amazing. Like, look at this North Korean craftsmanship. So you see how he kind of like has to, he's forced to spin what his true intention was. He's like, I love North things made by North Korea. Like, where can I get these boots? And eventually, I think that the case was dropped. But,
wow.
I mean, just think about that. A random flippant comment at a TV station could get you killed.
Do you? Yeah. I can't. It's hard to imagine, man. But something stuck out to me, and I thought this was kind of funny how old school teachers were mandated to play the accordion. that was a requirement. Why? Like, it's just silliness. Like, everything was like, there's no better word than just silly. Every mandate and everything they can't, like, but they don't know any better. They're just sitting there like, okay, this guy is a god, like, you know, we should listen to him. I don't know, man. It's pretty.
Yeah, they had there was a lot of curious decisions. Like, kids are not allowed to celebrate their birthday. They have to celebrate the birthdays of Kim Song Il or whatever his name is, the main guy, the grandfather. Then the son, who's now the other guy's dead, Kim Jong Il. I don't care. I'm not gonna
Kim try Jong-un to learn
their stupid names. it's like I can't stand these people because, like Jocko said, like something that's fundamentally important to me is like in my life, like a philosophical tenet is like individual freedom. Like I'm big against the idea that like top down collectivism works. Like for exactly like this. How? What about the news story where they're talking about Kim Jong Un and his father are experts on everything. They're like experts on
goat farming.
How to produce more dairy from goats.
It's
and
like,
then
no, you just went to a goat farm. Like that. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you're 100% right. He's like, everyone should breed and eat ostrich. Like,
yeah, instead of, and then they're like, okay, no more rice. We're gonna do potatoes. Oh wait, they just lurched from one ill-conceived idea to the next. And that's Jocko's point. And Echo actually made a good point. He's like, when you flip incentives, because we always talk about how humans respond to incentives, where it's like there were farmers that their crop were confiscated by the government and then they would give them a little bit back to themselves. And so instead of, if you maximize for individual freedom, like you maximize the people they're incentivized to maximize their production, to do as much as they can. Meanwhile, when you restrict it on the other end, they're not going to do the most they can. They do the opposite. They do the least amount necessary. And even to their point, they were talking about, hey, instead of tending to the public farmland, they would tend to like their private little gardens of their own food that was feeding their own family. And as a result, this whole like flywheel just kept turning where it's like, oh, now they're not even, they're dedicating less and less time to the public's food. And then what happens over time, like the food obviously runs out and there's this massive famine. So it says, I'm reading here, it says from 1994 to 1998, North Korea suffered a famine that resulted in deaths between about, let's say, 500,000 people is the estimate.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a lot more than that, because I think the book says like 2 million, so I don't know which of these numbers is correct.
Who knows?
Yeah, it's, I mean, when you have an absolute control over
everything,
information, it's gonna be hard. But yeah, so, and then there was something else. I think Jocko talked about it, but you have to hang up you have to have one wall in your house dedicated, and all you can hang on that wall is the picture of first Kim Il Sung. And then eventually, when his son was starting to do more and more stuff, then Kim Jong Il. And it was by decree. Then they'd have people go in the book. They talk about, they have people visit your house to make sure that you're dusting it every day.
Jesus.
That's psychotic, man. That is very psychotic.
And they had these like middle-aged women. Remember, they're talking about like they were the basically the radio or the sound bird for anything inappropriate. Like, they just had these middle-aged women just waiting for you to slip, you know, just like that old lady that always called the cops because you were skateboarding. Now is like, you know,
it'll get you killed in North Korea.
It'll get you killed. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Or I don't know, man. These people were desperate, and they were eating babies and people and cannibalism, and they also got punished for it. It was like, it's like a lose-lose no matter what.
Well, they talked about that.
And they're sitting there right now. I can't help but think about that right now. Like, they're there right now.
Well, there's an entire famine going on, and they talk about, instead of like figuring out, hey, how do we get more food? They're like, hey, there's a lot of stuff to complain about, so now we have to put even bigger forces in the street to make sure people aren't complaining. Uh-huh. And then they kill that one poor peasant for taking copper wire. But he was taking copper wire from electric lines that weren't even working anymore.
Still theft, dude.
And they said, yeah, but they said the theft was supporting the capitalists. It's just like, oh, my goodness.
That makes no sense.
I mean, none of it does. That's so I guess the larger point is, like, to me, what I took away from the book is, like, another observation of human nature, that we are just in a completely chaotic world that we really don't understand. And within that world, like, all kinds of other simulations are running, in the sense that, like, North Korea might as well just be a computer game. They've walled off their country, right? And then they're just going to say, hey, we're going to have this bizarre set of rules that doesn't make sense to anybody else. And then we're going to see how, when we apply that operating system onto an entire population of, you know, 20 million people, whatever the number is, we're going to see what kind of results we get.
How this whole form, like, the genesis of this. Because, like you said, it was, like, one day electricity, one day not. Like, one day it was a nation that's, well, who knows how it was before 1950, but there, you know, I'm sure it was more normal. I'm sure it was more close to like South Korea in 1949. But,
well, you remember the Japanese controlled Korea, because I was just listening to Dan Carlin's latest episode. I went back and forth between that latest episode that came out a few months ago and then the audiobook, because it's almost the same amount of time. Like, it's right before the creation. So let's see. I'm looking right now. When did Kim Il-sung take power? He took power in 1948.
Okay.
And that, right before that, Korea, or Japan, if I'm not mistaken, was in control of Korea. Because they talk about how, like, fast Japan was conquering all of, like, you know, they went from basically like a closed off country to within 40 years being considered like a world power. enough that, you know, they had to contend, other world powers had to contend with them.
I guess. I don't think you really have to contend with them. Like,
no, Japan. Japan was on like a...
Imperial
Japan was on a streak. They were just dominating the entire region.
Dude, they were
spreading out from there.
They were undefeated until World War II.
Yeah, Korea being one of those.
Like, Japan, when you think, like, the history of Japan is one fascinating place, and you know, through this medium of podcasting, we're only going to really see like World War II, but they've been dominant over there. You know, they haven't. I don't think they've lost a war since, you know, the Japanese Empire didn't lose a war until WOW2. But I could be wrong. I think that's right. But anyway,
how old is the guy that's in charge now? Kim Jong-un.
He's a young dude. He's probably like,
and look how fat he is. How did he get this fat?
Fatty cakes.
Let's see. What? He was born. I'm looking for his birthday. He's 36 years old, man. Oh my God! If he lives, his father and grandfather lived a long time. That guy could be in charge for another 35, 40 years. Yeah. If nothing happens to him.
And if anything, he'll become friends with Trump. It's going to get, like, I think that'd be weird. it's almost likely, right? Oh, here he is.
Who's cutting his hair?
He's got a dope haircut, I think. Like, he gets nice fades. He doesn't get this in Korea, man. He's got to sneak out to get this cut.
Going to Japan or China?
Nah, he's going in the hood, bro. He's in, like, Paterson, New Jersey getting that cut. Nobody knows. He's like, you kind of look familiar, but no, nah, man, down the street. Yeah, here's a. This is really funny. The New York Times put. I'm not going to go into the article, but it's his haircut by the year, from 2013 to 2018. Yeah, it's kind of funny, but it's still, like, he has a distinct look, man. You got to give it up to him. Now this guy, man, I've one of the strangest thing I heard about Kim Jong Un is that he is the world's biggest buyer of Hennessy. Have you heard that? Like, he buys more Hennessy cognac than anybody else on the planet.
I mean, it kind of, like, makes sense.
It's like one of those strange facts. I wish that's the one thing that stuck with me when I went down the rabbit hole a few years ago, man. Back when, like, Vice and, like, all those people were going to North Korea, it was like the most interesting thing that you could watch at the time, you know, like it was North Korea this, North Korea that, and some GREs on North Korea. That was pretty interesting, man. I get a kick out of like learning this, but yet again, that it's fizzled away very quickly, knowing that this is how it is like right now. Like the you know, Barbara's book is not like you would think you'd be listening to something from the 50s with mm-hmm. that, right? Or way earlier, but this is like real time, man. Like this is happening right now. And
yeah, so here's some interesting stuff about Kim Jong-un. Dennis Rodman met him. He took a trip to Kim Jong-un's private island, and Rodman described it as, it's like Hawaii or Ibiza, but he's the only one that lives there. They talked about, oh my God. So he smokes cigarettes. He's diabetic.
Yeah, that was one thing. He smokes.
Suffers from hypertension, and they think he weighs about 290 pounds.
Oh, fatty cake.
So he's just like this
little carbon,
gluttonous, you know? Fat dictator. Like, while the rest of his country starts. See, that's why it's just disgusting to me. Like this whole. I enjoyed the book, but it's really also hard to listen to when you hear about the suffering that goes on, and that the people like from the top are not. It's not like they're taking part in the suffering too, which just it's really hard to hear. Actually,
no, it's safe to say that he's living good.
How do you get to 290 pounds? They're not very tall. I see him in a picture of Donald Trump. What, Donald Trump's probably what, like 5'11", 6 foot, something like that.
I don't know.
And Kim Jong-un is like a foot, like a half of a head shorter than he is. He's got pictures with all kinds of people, though. The South Korean president, the president of the United States. Who's this guy? Secretary of State, former Secretary of State in the U.S. All right, man. Anything else that you want to talk about before we depart?
That's it, bro.
All right, cool. Well, let me just plug, before we go, let me plug my other podcast. If you're interested in the history of entrepreneurship, I do a podcast similar to Jocko's where I read books and pull out interesting ideas. It's called Founders Podcast. You can get it at founderspodcast.com or anywhere else that you listen to your podcast. I'll leave links down below.
Yeah.
Rob,
love the Cornelius one, the flatulence king. What was that?
the fart mogul. A little known fact that not only was Cornelius Vanderbilt one of the richest people in history, especially per capita, but his private doctor did not enjoy seeing him because I guess the entire family suffered from excessive flatulence. So not only would he beat you in war or beat you in business, but he would fart in your presence excessively.
You imagine that? Like, I've been thinking about that pretty much all day and yesterday evening after listening, like, cause I work for these high net worth individuals, right? So like, I kind of understand, like, you can just be summoned to a meeting and you have to sit there and listen to what they got to say. But Cornelius, just the Commodore, would just sit there and just be ripping farts. And you can't say anything. You can't say a thing. And he probably doesn't even acknowledge it. It's just like, without missing a beat in his in speaking,
he acts like it didn't happen. We're just gonna ignore this happen.
Yeah.
Oh man.
He's like, that was you. Now get out. Jesus.
Oh man, that's
great podcast. Rob. Great podcast. I recommend it.
Thank you. You are the comedic effect for Jocko Academy. So next week, I'm just looking at it now. We're gonna get into an all-time classic, "The Art of War" by Sun Tzu.
Sun Tzu.
So that'll be fun. So yeah, we will talk about that next week, and I will talk to you later.
I don't know much about it. I'm looking forward to it.
Huh? Are you serious? You don't? Well, you've heard
a little bit
about it.
Yeah,
you haven't,
I know.
Read it, though.
I've never read it. Like,
but undoubtedly, you've heard some principles from it, you know, throughout time or whatever. But yeah, it'll be interesting to hear the whole thing. So I sent you a text earlier, but we talked about the Mao Zedong book on guerrilla warfare, and I didn't have enough time to read it before we did that podcast, because I wanted to, because I like to try to, if I have the time, you know, at least add some extra material to our conversations. Uh-huh. But it's sitting on the desk right now, so I'm going to read it. And it's very, very small. It's like tiny paperback. It's like 120 pages. I got the translation by Samuel B. Griffin, which is the one that Jocko had. So
okay.
I'll probably be talking to you about that on future podcasts.
Looking forward.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
Later.